On today's episode of the Kojo and JMO show, it's a long one, so stick with us. We got lots of good stuff. Super, super wild card weekend. All six games, we talk about them. The Eagles, they fired their head coach. The Jags have a new head coach. National championship, that was a game. It wasn't a good game, but it was a game. And NBA, crazy news in the NBA.
Yeah, we are all over the place. JMO took the words right out of my mouth. We do have a long one, but it is filled with great content. You're going to want to listen to the whole episode. Please, you'll enjoy it. More probably than we did recording it.
Yeah, my voice is out at the end. So hope you guys enjoy it. Lots of good stuff. And here we go. Welcome to the Kojo and JMO show. Today is January 15th. What a wild week. We got a lot to cover today. There's been a lot going on this past 7 days.
Yeah, it is a lot to cover. I'm excited to talk about it. And before we start the show, I have to give you credit because you put an electrifying script together. You took a lot of just words and thoughts just right out of my head and mouth. So, you know, it's like we're mind melting after all this time podcasting.
Mind melting. Sounds like eating some edibles and melting your mind. Not that I've ever done that. But yeah, this weekend, super wild card weekend. The first time we've ever had six wild card games, and it was football all weekend long.
I gotta say, this was one of my favorite weekends ever of all time. Like, the only way this weekend would have been better is if I didn't lose my bets. That's the only way. Other than that, this weekend was perfect.
Yeah, I got to shout out my girlfriend because I was with her all weekend, and she's not a huge fan of watching football all weekend, and she was cool with it. I only missed the Buffalo game. I got to watch the last like 2 minutes of it. I was checking the score on my phone. I was at the Central Park Zoo, by the way.
Nice.
I was really impressed with the zoo. It's tucked in the middle of New York City, and they got snow leopards. There were monkeys. There were seals. They have a seal pool in the middle when you first walk in, and the seals were going crazy. They were like jumping over rocks, and then the zookeepers fed them, and they were doing. These seals are smarter than dogs. Like, they were doing tricks, and like it was impressive. So shout out Central Park Zoo because I was impressed.
You know, I've been to New York lots of times, never been to the zoo there, so maybe next time I go I'll check it out.
I did not even know there was a Central Park Zoo until like Friday night. So
did you go to Central Perk?
I didn't watch Friends.
Oh my gosh, you're
is there a real place that's like based off, like that they made off from the show?
I'm pretty sure they have it set up where you can like tour it, so I don't know all the details about it, but whenever I go back to New York, you better believe I'm going to tour Central Perk.
So what was going on? So, like I said, I didn't get to watch the whole game. It turned out to be, like, the closest game. Yeah, the closest scoring game. And it looked like the Colts D played really well, which is their strength.
So, not really, actually. I mean, Josh Allen. So, Buffalo came out to a slow start, which has happened several times to them. But once Josh Allen got going, man, he was a fireball out there. He was awesome, hard to stop, really just did whatever he wanted until that late strip sack, which luckily Buffalo was able to jump on the ball. But other than that, they really did whatever they wanted. You know, they don't have a great running game. A big thing that I think a lot of people are overlooking in that is in the first, I think it was the first half, the Bills' average starting field position was their own 8. And for the game, it was their own 15-yard line. And they still threw for 350-some yards and scored 27 points. So,
were you nervous?
Oh, 100%.
On that last drive.
Everyone I was texting, I was like, they're going to blow it. They're going to lose. You know, they had the 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. And then Indy all of a sudden. And Indy had been struggling to run the ball. All of a sudden, Nyheim Hines, boom, gone. You know, Jonathan Taylor breaks a couple ones. So then Phillip Rivers starts to pick them apart. I thought the Bills played pretty solid defensively up until the fourth quarter. I know Indianapolis left, you know, a lot of points on the board. But in general, yes, I was very nervous at the end of the game. but I feel pretty good moving forward in the postseason with the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, it came down to a Phillip Rivers Hail Mary. And
he couldn't even throw 50 yards. Say,
the poor guy couldn't even get it to the goal line. He was like 5 yards short, incomplete. How mad would have been, because that was clearly a fumble from Zach Pascal.
Yeah, I was pretty upset by that. But, you know, I always say if you leave it to the officials, then you didn't do your job. So you can't blame the officials, even though that was a wrong call. Could have, you know, played a factor in costing the Bills the game. But if the Bills would have taken care of the lead when they were up 24-10, you don't have to put it in the officials' hands. And luckily, Phillip Rivers can't throw the ball 50 yards.
First Bills, they should have put Jacoby Brissett in. They've done that earlier this year where they put Jacoby in for Hail Mary and QB sneaks.
But I agree. They should have.
Also could have been Phillip Rivers' last snap, so didn't want to take him out. First playoff win in 25 years for the Bills. How does it feel to be, you know, a Bills fan and you missed out on about 24, 23 of those 25 years since you just now have joined the wagon?
I know. I got on right at the right time. Excuse me. But, yeah, so, I mean, for those of you who don't know, it's not like I'm just this bandwagon Bills fan. Like, they brought me in to mini camp, you know, obviously to participate when no other teams would sign me or give me a chance. So that's why I'm loyal to the Bills and Bills Mafia. But, and like I say a million times, when I was in that locker room, even for the 4 days I was there before I got cut, you could just tell the culture there was building and it was going to be great. So I am ecstatic that they finally got that monkey off their back. First playoff win in 25 years. It's different when you have expectations. Like I've said before, they're no longer the underdogs. You know, they're roaring. They're the hottest team in football right now, and they're matching up with the second hottest team in football this weekend. So it's going to be a great game to watch, but I am very, very happy that they finally won a playoff game after 25 years.
Yeah, so we're gonna buzz through all the six games from Super Wildcard Weekend before we hit the divisional round game later. So probably the biggest upset might come later. But the Rams went into Seattle, won 30-20 with two separate quarterbacks, Wolford, the finance man. I really liked him too. And within the first two drives, he's in a neck brace, sent to the hospital. So in comes Jared Goff with a broken thumb and does okay, does enough.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's not act like Jared Goff lit the world on fire, but that defense for the Rams is unbelievable. It's incredible. You know, even when Aaron Donald was out of the game, they still dominated. It wasn't like they lost the beat. Like, they continued to dominate. You know, Russell Wilson, who's supposed to be one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, severely struggled.
He had 11 completions.
Yeah. So you got to give all the props in the world to that defense. I think they're going to make the game interesting in Green Bay too. But what ticks me off.
Pissed you off. What yeah, pissed you off, Colin?
Is if Jared Goff was healthy, I would have picked the Rams. But I knew he wasn't healthy. I knew this Wofford guy was playing, who I didn't think was bad, but I just expected so much more out of Russell Wilson against Wofford. And then granted, Goff came in, but he wasn't healthy. It's not like he played great. But like, I'm just disappointed in Russell Wilson. I don't care how good the opposing defense is. You should not play that bad when you're Russell Wilson.
Yeah, that MVP campaign is now, it was in the back, you know, back view mirror. Now it's, you know, in a different zip code, you know, that I don't know. It's, and I put this down here, but like, how big of a difference? There are a few teams this year where it doesn't matter that there aren't any fans, but there are a few teams that I think it's a big deal that there aren't any fans. I think Seattle is one of them. I think you could go New Orleans as well. Really, you could do Cleveland and Buffalo, even though they do have limited fans, at least for Buffalo's case this past Sunday or Saturday. But the no fans in Seattle, and you had a rookie quarterback in Wofford, I guess first-year quarterback, and then an injured Jared Goff. Would it have been a different game? I think it probably would have. I don't know if the outcome is different, but I don't know.
So I like I don't know. I will say I read an article. Normally, I would 100% agree with you that the fans would make a difference. But I actually read an article that, like, in the like past decade, how home field advantage has really kind of gone away in like terms of expected points added, like for a home team in a playoff game. And of course, now this season showed that it was the least valuable to have a home game. So I will say the fans probably make a little bit of a difference. But we've seen a decrease in, you know, expected points for versus expected points against. So point differential has gone gotten significantly closer for home teams over the past decade. So I think, you know, for whatever reason, as we move on in time, home field advantage becomes less and less, even with or without fans.
I'm trying to look up the Seahawks record in the last 10 years, like what they've done since their Super Bowl. Not that the Super Bowl was 10 years ago, just trying to get a...
What was the last one they were in, 2014, when they lost to the... or was that 2015, yeah, when they lost to the Patriots?
They lost to the... In 2014, they lost to the Patriots. They were 12-4. So they went... See, lost
that game, lost me a lot of money.
They lost in the divisional round 15, divisional round in 16, wild card 18, and then divisional last year, and now a wild card. I mean, it's hard to complain because they're getting to these games, but Russell Wilson is supposed to be that elite level quarterback, and elite level quarterbacks don't have games. Like he did, the pick six, 11 completions at home. So I don't know.
I feel like I did. Granted, I don't really watch like SportsCenter or anything, but like I feel like there wasn't that big of a backlash towards him for having such a poor game. Like I feel like certain quarterbacks are held to different standards.
Yeah, and what helps in terms of the media world is the Cleveland game and all the stories that come from that. This game gets overlooked in terms of what's on the A block of SportsCenter.
Right. And, true.
So that helped.
Think about it though. Think if, you know, and granted they are relatively unproven and they don't have the resume that Russell Wilson has, but imagine if Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson had games like that in the postseason where they threw a pick, they were 11 for what, 27, I think he was, for like 174 yards and lost at home to a quarterback that just had thumb surgery. Yeah. Like the media presence would just be completely different. And like I said, I get that the resumes are different of the quarterbacks, but why doesn't Russell Wilson get the same backlash?
It's a good point. And looking at the stat line, DK Metcalf was a leading receiver, but Ramsey is a difference maker. Like, he is so good. And if I'm a Jags fan,
I hate him too. I hate how good he is. I hate him. You can't stand him.
You hate how good he is, or you hate his personality?
Both. I wish he wasn't good because his personality drives me nuts.
What do you hate him? What do you hate so much about him? You're a corner. You're a DB. You're the same way.
But I don't like. I never ever ran my mouth as some of these guys do. Jalen Ramsey is one of them. Just run their mouths the whole game. Marcus Peters is another one. They just never shut up, and I hate that. Like, at some point, it's just like, can you just shut up and play football?
This year, though, Ramsey's backing it up. I'm with you on Marcus Peters, but Ramsey's playing really well this year.
I know he is. I think he's the best corner in the NFL, but I hate he never shuts up.
All right, the Saturday night, Sunday night slate. I guess it was Sunday night football on Saturday night. Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke, man.
The quarterback of the future.
We need to get this guy an MVP trophy, sign him to a Mahomes $500 million contract. This was incredible.
We got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, so funny story. I saw Heinicke play in college. He played at Old Dominion, ODU, down here in Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk, but that's okay.
So I actually saw him back in his he had a game here in Virginia at ODU where he threw for 730 yards.
Did he really?
Yes, it was a record at the time. I think Mahomes ended up breaking it, ironically Jeez. Enough. But, yeah, Heinicke, 26 for 44, 306 yards, one touchdown, one pick. But the guts from this kid – he got hurt. I don't know what happened to him, shoulder, something. And then he comes out of the locker. We're going to have somebody named Montez. We're going to have Montez come in the game at quarterback for the football team.
Is that the dude from Colorado?
Yes, it is. And Heinicke was able to get back on the field. And, I mean, they played well.
I thought they played really well. I mean, their defense is awesome. That team is going to be really good next year, depending on what they do at the quarterback position. Or maybe this Heinicke kid keeps playing and balling. But I've really liked the Washington football team, and it was really hard for me to pick against them last week just because that's their story, everything about them I like. But that was a fun game to watch. I think, you know, Tom Brady and the Bucks looked pretty solid. But
yeah,
I was surprised and happy to see how well that Heinicke guy played.
The football team's defense played well, but they never made the play, you know, when they needed to. On some third downs, they got to Brady a little bit, but not as much as they needed to. And, you know, Brady didn't make any stupid mistakes, stupid picks, and didn't turn the ball over. So, I mean, it's hard to beat Brady and them. But, it was an exciting game that I didn't think was going to be that exciting. I picked last week football team plus 8.5, and they covered, which was awesome. It was exciting. Heinicke,
go ahead.
I would say Heinicke came up to Brady like at the end of the game, and Heinicke looks so much smaller than him.
Like Heinicke's what, 6 foot, right?
I guess. Yeah, he came up to, and Brady was probably like, "Who the hell is this guy?" Like touched me on the shoulder, and it's Heinicke.
Yeah, Brady's becoming like a little celebrity with all these other younger players now.
Yeah,
everyone's like, it's probably filling his ego. He probably loves it.
Yeah, and he became the oldest player to throw a touchdown pass in postseason history. Do you see the graphic that they put up with George Blanda is who he passed?
No, I didn't.
George Blanda looked like he was 80 years old on that graphic. And it's like, how are these two people the same age? Like Brady, you know, looks like Brady. He's doing his TB12 method. And this guy, George Blanda, was smoking a pack of Marlboros and drinking beer at halftime in his games. And I'm impressed that Blanda even made it that far.
Where do you get this?
It was on the graphic. It was on the graphic. George, awesome. I'm looking up the photo right now. George Blanda. My God. He looks so old. But yes.
George Blanda.
Shout out Tom Brady.
In a minute.
43 years, 159 days old.
Can you believe he's this good at that age?
No. So that was a 1970 AFC Championship game that George Blanda threw that touchdown pass. So that was 50 years ago. So that would make George Blanda 93 years old today. I don't think George Blanda is still alive. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know. It's a good question.
If he is, he's 93. Now I need to know. Now
yeah,
I need
look
to know
it
if
up.
He's
you
still alive.
Pick it up right now. But yeah, what I want to say is I really, really want to see Washington lock that quarterback thing down. Got to see it. I really think that they could compete next year.
George Blanda died 10 years ago. Rest in peace.
Oh, man. 83, if he really did smoke the pack of cigs and drink beer at halftime, that's a pretty impressive lifeline there.
He looked like it, but yeah, two different worlds in the 70s and 2020, what you look like when you're 43.
Yeah, I think technology and just different science has come out on how to better protect your body.
Yeah, I'd say so. So then moving to Sunday. Saturday was great. We had a full day of football. You wake up on Sunday, and you have another full day of football, and you're thinking life can't get better than this. And it really can't. I'm going to be honest. It started off with the 1 o'clock game, Ravens beating the Titans 20-13. This was a game with narratives that just flip-flopped on you because it was Ravens went down 10-0, Titans scored, and it was there's a story of the Ravens are – blank and whatever, oh and whatever went down 30 points or 10 points, sorry. And then they come back, they win. Everybody says Lamar can't win a playoff game. He wins a playoff game. The team comes back. Everyone says they're not built to, you know, come from behind. Narratives just flip-flopped all over the place.
Yeah, I will say, so I placed a live bet this game when Baltimore went down 10-0. I put money on them to win. So I was happy about that because that made my, you know, losses.
What was that money line at when they were down 10-0?
I think it was like +2 something.
It's not bad. But yeah, I mean, and even with part of them going down 10-0, Lamar threw that pick that was just horrendous.
That was horrible. I'm not exaggerating. I would have made a better throw than that.
And it's like, and then I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh no, here we go. Here goes Lamar again.
I feel like a lot of people were thinking that way as soon as he threw that pick.
And then his run to score the touchdown was a 45-yard run, was incredible. Like, that run, I think, changed the momentum, changed the outlook of the game, and really flipped things around. If he doesn't get that touchdown run, if, you know, he gets tackled for a couple-yard gain and they punt or kick a field goal, I don't know if they go on to win that game.
His legs make him, and obviously that's stating the obvious, but he's so dangerous. He's really unlike any quarterback we've ever seen. Like, he, I think, has surpassed Vic level in terms of danger on the ground.
He's really good.
It's really, you know, and it's so much easier said than done, but if you can sit and force him to throw from the pocket, you're going to beat the Ravens. You will. Yeah. If he has to sit back there and drop back and throw, you know, 30 times a game and not scramble, you're going to beat them. But it's near impossible because of how athletic he is. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
I was literally going to say something and it just left my mind. It was on Lamar Jackson. It was about Michael Vick. And now it's gone. It's gone from my mind.
Told me I was crazy for saying he was Michael Vick 2.0.
That was on the radio. So those wavelengths are long gone. There's no audio files of those wavelengths. So I never said that.
Oh, we need to get Young Potty on here because he was there when you said it.
What was it about? Oh, this is driving me crazy. I can't remember this. It was about Lamar. I can't remember. I'll have to figure it out. It'll come back to me like in a half hour. But these two teams, that they played each other last year in the playoffs.
Bad blood between them, too.
Yeah. So the Marcus Peters, who we just mentioned, got a pick on Tannehill, ran to the sideline, you know, slid, got down, and then immediately ran to the Titans logo, and the whole team followed him and started dancing on the logo. What's your take on this? Are you okay with it or not?
So I get why they did it, because the Tennessee Titans in the regular season warmed up on the logo of the Baltimore Ravens when Malcolm Butler got into it with John Harbaugh, and then Mike Vrabel got into it with Harbaugh. We actually talked about it a little bit on the podcast, however many weeks ago that was. So that is, I'm okay with that in retaliation. What I'm not okay with is after the game when they ran off the field and didn't like shake the hands of the opponents. That I don't like. That annoys me. That's what the Detroit Pistons did, you know, to the Bulls back in the 90s, and I'm just not a fan of it. I think it's cowardly. I do. I think it's really cowardly and immature.
I think I'm on the reverse. I think I have more of a problem with them dancing on the logo, and then let's say they don't dance on the logo and they just go into the locker room after the game. Okay, but I don't know. What is with the logo? This is like a new thing. Like, it used to just be like T.O. did it against the Cowboys when he was with the 49ers however many years ago. And, you know, that was it. Like, nobody did it again. And now you've got Juju doing it. What is with all the logo activity this year?
I think people – it comes down to a respect thing. And I honestly think, like, as we move along in time and in society, the respect level continues to go down with social media. Everybody's just kind of running their mouths, talking trash. And I feel like that's translating onto the field now with the logo. People just want to disrespect other people, I feel like.
Yeah, I guess so. But it was
so a that good... bothers you more than not shaking hands, though?
Well,
I have to think about it. It's like a respect that, like, that's the ultimate respect thing. After a football game, go and you shake the opponent's hand.
I get that. And I understand it more why they did it than the dancing on the logo. Because they danced on the logo, everybody's pissed off. Emotions are high. I mean, there was already a history between Harbaugh and Vrabel and Malcolm Butler. So there's already a history between these guys and getting in these verbal arguments. And then they danced on the logo. And then literally 5 minutes later, after they did that, you're supposed to go up to them and say, hey, good game, good luck next week.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. If you're the Ravens, wouldn't you then want to go shake their hands? Like, yeah, we just beat you. We sent you home. Yeah, we danced on your logo. Now I'm going to come shake your hand and tell you I'm better than you.
Yeah, I agree. It's,
like, why not? Like, and that's the other aspect there.
I'm with you on that. It's the icing on the cake if you're a Ravens player or a Ravens fan is we beat you in your stadium. We stomped on your logo. Hey, we're going on next week. You can tell us good luck because you're going home. I get that. It does, the optics of it does look a little cowardly if the Ravens just run into the locker room and say, you know, we're done with these guys, on to Buffalo kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. No matter how bad I've ever lost in a game or whatever, I've always shook the opponent's hand. I've always congratulated them and wished them luck. Even if I hated them, I always did.
Even Fordham freshman year?
Fordham. I did. I said congratulated Chase. I think I did like black out a little bit. And I hate that you brought that game up, but
We'll move on. Saints Bears. What were we thinking?
The Bears are atrocious. I hate myself.
We both talked ourselves into the Bears last week that this could happen, and boy were we wrong.
Well, here's the thing that drives me nuts is if they had any competent offense, like even remotely, that would have been a game.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, their defense fought their balls off to be in that game. Now, they aren't great. They're not a good tackling defense. They missed so many tackles. But they forced, you know, the Saints into some mistakes. That game drove me nuts. I hated watching it.
And if Wims catches that touchdown pass, which was a perfect play, it's a new game. Like,
I know.
I think it's 10 to 3 or 10 to 7.
I think it would have been tied.
Either 10
or no, I don't know. I forget.
I think it would have been 10 to 7 Chicago if he catches that ball. And instead, that was the best opportunity they had all game.
Yeah, I came on the show before. I'm trying to get into a habit of not bashing players. And I said, you know, Trubisky was under too much fire, got too much hate. But man, did he just come out and was just not good.
He didn't even make it to the slime zone.
Yeah, not good, man. He did not play well. If I'm the Bears, you know, and they've said that they're looking at all options moving forward to figure out the quarterback position because they need some help.
Yeah, the Bears are now in a weird world where they made the playoffs, so they've got this false sense of we're good because Nagy's staying there. I think the GM, like, things are going to be pretty – they're going to come back and be like, hey, we made the playoffs. Like, we fought hard against the Saints, and are one of the best teams, so therefore we're close when they're really not that close, I feel like.
You know, though, if you look at Nagy's three-year career there, and I don't think he should be fired because of this reason – they've made the postseason 2 out of the 3 years that he's been there. That's not easy to do. When you look at a lot of first-time head coaches, their first 3 years, most of them do not result in 2 out of 3 years making the postseason.
I know one coach who made the postseason 2 out of 3 years and won a Super Bowl in the first 2 out of 3 years, and he got fired.
We'll
get to him later.
We'll get there. But it's very rare that a coach has that kind of success. So I do think he should keep his job. I think the GM should keep his job. I just think they need to figure out that the offense in general moving forward.
Did you watch any of the game on Nickelodeon, or did you just see the blips? So
I don't think that's a bad idea to get young kids engaged in football. But like for me, I would hate every second watching slime.
Cordell Patterson dropped the F-bomb live on the Nickelodeon stream.
That's amazing.
So they had to teach the kids on Nickelodeon what that meant. I thought it was kind of cool. The slime, he scored in the end zone, got slime. Sean Payton got slimed after the game. The ironic thing is Nickelodeon did this MVP voting where it's like the Nickelodeon valuable player. It's their version of the MVP. And Trubisky won the MVP.
Why?
It's a fan vote, and he won.
So the fans love Trubisky watch Nickelodeon.
The fans are all in on Trubisky, and apparently the MVP of the game was supposed to get slimed, but because they lost and it was Trubisky, they had to slime Sean Payton instead.
gosh.
I'm all here. I think there should be one Nickelodeon game every week. Put it like the worst matchup of the week. Like if you've got a Jets Houston or I don't know. Give me the worst matchup of the week on whatever the slate is. Put it on Nickelodeon and just have an MVP every game and have someone get slimed every week.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm just not going to watch that feed. I'll watch the other feeds.
My last beef is this rule at the end of the game that makes no sense to me. So the spread, when we talked on the podcast last week, it was plus 10. It got bumped up to plus 11 by kickoff. So it's 21-3 with like 2 minutes to go. The game's over. This doesn't matter. But Trubisky, the MVP, he leads the Bears down the field and on the last play of the game throws the ball to Jimmy Graham in double coverage and makes an incredible one-handed catch. One of the best catches of the weekend, probably the best catch of the weekend. And so that makes the score 21-9. You're thinking, okay, they kicked the extra point, plus 11, push, everybody's happy.
The Vegas called in the fix because it was a lot of Joe's bet, including us, the Bears plus 11. So, of course, Vegas called the refs and said, don't make him kick the extra point. So I fully believe that.
So, apparently, there's some rule that was invented 2 years ago to where if a touchdown is scored on the last play of the game and it does not affect the final outcome, then you don't have to do a PAT or two-point try.
Because Vegas. It's all about Vegas.
But I feel like as sports gets legalized, sports betting gets legalized, that affects the out. Like, it says in the rule book, oh, it doesn't affect the outcome of the game. Oh, but it also affects millions of dollars in Vegas.
I'm telling you, Vegas controls the NFL.
The biggest surprise, I almost lost track where we were. The biggest surprise of the weekend probably was your Steelers.
Not my Steelers.
Losing in the first round of playoffs. Browns win, first win in 25 years, right? 26 years? No, longer. No, I'm making that up. 25, 26 years.
It's a long time.
Long time. Almost as long as we've been alive or even longer.
Longer. It was when Bill Belichick was there, I think, in 1994.
Yeah, I was not born in 94. Spoiler alert. But holy shit, dude. Can you believe this?
I can. I picked it on the podcast. I said the Browns, they were in part of my parlay. That failed because of the Bears. I had this weird gut feeling. Everything, like I said on the last podcast, suggested to me that the Browns were going to win the game. All the history, never beating Big Ben at Heinz Field, you know, they just had the mojo. Streaks are meant to be broken.
You just had it. You had that feeling in your bubbly gut of yours.
I did, and it was right from the first snap that went over Big Ben's head that him and James Conner somehow didn't jump on. And then the Browns get it in the end zone. It was just the whole game was marvelous. You know, I deleted Twitter, so I couldn't go on Twitter to see all my Yinzer fans' reactions, but just texting some of them was glorious. It was amazing how upset people in Pittsburgh were. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, that game had speaking of Seattle and their history, that game had a Seattle-Denver Super Bowl feel to it where the first snap.
Literally, that's the exact same thing I thought.
First snap, touchdown, and it's just like, oh, no, how do you come back from this? And they jumped out on them 28-0. And even then, they were still like over 2.5 quarters to go when it was 28-0. And you're like, okay, like this is good, but if I'm a Browns fan, it's like, all right, you know, we can't celebrate yet.
The Steelers gave a little pushback, made it. It was 35-23, and I was thinking the Steelers are coming back, but then, boom, Chubb, 50 yards on a screen, touchdown. It was awesome, dude. It was so cool.
Like you said, the streak, the Browns had not won in Pittsburgh since, I think, 2002 is what we said. I think they lost 18 straight.
Yep.
Stefanski was not there because of COVID. They had some guy named Van Pelt.
Alex Van Pelt, he played quarterback at Pitt, one of the best quarterbacks in Pitt history.
Did you say that last week?
Did say that.
So he went back to his own stomping grounds. Maybe that's why they broke the streak. They needed a Pitt play caller for Cleveland.
I got to say this, though, Pitt. This is easily one of the worst losses in Pittsburgh history. I would probably put it second or third. The Browns were missing their two starting corners. They lost the defensive lineman for the year. They didn't have their head coach. They didn't have their all-pro offensive guard. And I'm pretty sure they were missing. They didn't practice all week. I'm pretty sure they were missing 4 to 5 other staff members who are coaches. And they beat the crap out of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They picked them off, what, 4 or 5 times?
Something
without
like that.
Their two starting corners. It's unbelievable what happened to Pittsburgh. I can't believe they haven't made more changes to their team, their organization, than what they have. I'll leave it at that.
The worst 11-0 team of all time.
They were. We called it. We talked about it. There was something when you watched them on film, they were so underwhelming. And it showed the last 6 weeks of the season, losing 5 of 6.
The Jets won more games in the last 6 weeks than the Steelers did.
That's amazing. I love that you just said that.
So, Steelers fans, welcome to quarterback purgatory, because don't know if Ben's the guy.
No. This Steelers team is in massive amounts of trouble, J-Mo. Big Ben's supposed to, is due $41 million, and even if he retires, he's still a $22 million cap hit. If he comes back, they're not going to be able to re-sign, and their 8 starters are unrestricted free agents. You think they're going to be able to sign any one of them if Big Ben plays on a $41 million contract? They're screwed.
So I don't want to bash Ben because he played okay. He played
– other than his 4 picks.
Other than his interceptions, like – the way he fought back was valiant.
Yeah, it was admirable.
And you got to give him respect that he's out there throwing the ball 71 times, and he's 100 years old. I don't know how his arm didn't fall off, but, I mean, to see him sitting on the bench with the tears coming down his eyes, it seemed like this might be the end, and he kind of realized that.
I think it is time. I think football-wise and life-wise, I think he should retire.
Him and Rivers, right? The same class with Eli?
I think that they should both retire. You know, I think it is time to hang it up.
Darnold to Pittsburgh?
Dude, everyone in Pittsburgh is any possible quarterback that's going to be out there. They're like, the Steelers should trade for him. They
any
should do
functional
this. They should
quarterback.
Do that. Yeah, so I have no idea what's going to happen. I am excited to kind of see what happens in Pittsburgh. This offseason, I think it'll be interesting living in the city to see what happens. Excuse me, but I don't know what's going to happen.
And they really didn't have to run the ball as well as they – I mean, Hunt had 48 yards, Chubb had 76. So, I mean, they didn't have to run the ball down their throat. Baker had 3 touchdowns.
I love Baker, man.
So it was congratulations, Browns and Bills fans. What a weekend. What a super weekend for Super Wild Card weekend.
You know what drives me nuts, though, is Juju and Claypool just not shutting up. They get their teeth kicked in and they're still running their mouths. Like, shut up.
And this is, I even feel like there's a gap between us and them, and we are 3 to 4 years older than them.
I know.
But I feel like there's this gap where it's just like they just don't get it. Like, I don't know if it's TikTok. I don't know what it is, but for them to just continuing to talk shit before the game and after the game, it's like, guys, like, when are you going to learn to just go out there and play?
I know. It honestly, there's such a generational gap within 4 to 6 years. I'm telling you, it's there. I don't know what it is, like you said. It is weird. Not like we're close in age, and it's just we're so different. It's weird. It's really, really weird.
Yeah, I can't explain it. And I mean, Claypool said doesn't matter. They're still going to get clapped next week against the Chiefs. Like Juju said before the game, the Browns is the Browns.
Just shut up.
Why is it the Steelers receivers? Like, I feel like Juju has been the culprit all year long, and then he's just rubbing off on Claypool. It's like, yeah.
They're honestly like entitled little children is what they are.
Yeah, just shut up and play. And if you're a Steelers fan, like, it has to infuriate you. Like, Claypool was obviously one of the better rookie receivers this year, him and Jefferson.
But, like, still, like, he hasn't done anything. What has he done? Yeah. Had one good year with, you know, a Hall of Fame-level quarterback. Like, I just, dude, it really grinds my freaking gears.
Well, maybe they'll learn, and next year they'll shut up. But until then, they'll just keep talking, and that'll be it.
I hope they lose every game they play.
Okay, so that was Super Wild Card Weekend. Like I said, it was super. I really enjoyed it. I want there to be all day football, NFL football on Saturday and Sunday every week, but that's not the case. We got to wrap up the football field weekend with the national championship game.
Hold on. You're forgetting something to talk about.
Oh, you're right. Thanks for... I swear I'm not doing this on purpose. At first, I left it off the script, and I jumped it on the script. I'm not doing this on purpose, but we'll give my
quick rant. Give us a quick rant.
My take here. So, Eagles head coach Doug Peterson was fired on Wednesday?
Something like that.
Tuesday? And it's just, I don't understand it. I'm not angry. I don't have this hatred or hate-filled rant. It's just Doug Peterson, you can look at this year and you can see how Carson Wentz regressed. And, you know, you can point the finger at Doug Peterson saying, hey, you know, the play calling wasn't great. You know, you abandoned the run. You didn't, you know, move the pocket for Carson. You didn't do sprint outs. You didn't do bootlegs. And because of these things, Carson regressed, yada, yada, yada. But at the end of the day, like, Doug Peterson doesn't have any guys. Like, the Eagles don't have any guys, any young playmakers, any young talent. And that's not his fault. That's on the general manager, Howie Roseman. And it just feels like Doug Peterson is going to be the scapegoat for this season and get fired. And that means they're going to stick with Carson Wentz. The general manager is going to be there still. They're going to bring in a new coach, and this new coach is going to have to try and fix Carson Wentz. And I don't know. I don't know if it's going to work. It's just crazy to me how quick things have fallen off. How, you know, 3 years ago, this team won the Super Bowl with Doug Peterson, with Carson Wentz. And now they were at the top of the world, and now they're at the bottom of the mountain. And it's just crazy how quick this happens. And I just feel like Doug Peterson was the scapegoat. And like I said, you can point to things he did wrong this year, and he didn't have a great year. But
but like some of the stuff that like I read too was he didn't want to. He almost quit last year when they made him fire his, you know, offensive coordinator, and supposedly a lot of, you know, interference from ownership and the general manager came into effect in terms of his decision making. And it seemed like a lot of it was not just him being fired, but a kind of a mutual agreement to part ways, but kind of on ugly terms.
Yeah, there was a source saying that Doug Peterson was just tired of people telling him what to do. And in a sense, like, I understand that. When he first came onto the scene in 2016, he's a first-year coach. You know, he doesn't have a lot of experience. If the general manager kind of want to put their hands on things and help out where they see fit, then that makes sense. But the guy won a Super Bowl. And after that, like, you should be like, okay, he knows what he's doing. Let's let him, you know, have the keys to the car kind of thing. And it didn't seem like from these sources and these reports that was the case. And yeah, that was and the leading factor.
You want to take these things, you know, with a grain of salt because you never know how accurate or truthful they are.
Right.
But something like you said, how does in 3 years it get that bad? So, you know, something was obviously going on behind the scenes. And, you know, for him to put in, you know, Nate Sudfeld in that game, like something's off here.
Right.
Something's off.
So that makes me think, because at the time I said on the podcast, I was like, is that the owner's decision? Is that Doug Peterson's decision? Like, who's making that call? And it seemed like after the game, there were reports that Doug Peterson was going to stay the coach and that his job was safe. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. If he knew that he was going to be back next year, then throw in Sudfeld. If you want to call that actively tanking, or you want to call it seeing Sudfeld on the field, you know, whatever. But that makes sense. But now that he got fired, it's like maybe he did not have anybody's blessing to do this, and he just went rogue and was like, F you, this is what I want to do. I want to see Sudfeld get reps, so this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think there's so many different ways you could look at that situation. But all I know is I think he's a good coach. I saw he's going to take the year off. I think somebody's going to get lucky when they hire him in a year or two.
Yeah, Super Bowl coaches don't grow on trees, so someone's going to grab him, and he'll probably – don't know if he'll ever win another Super Bowl, but he'll be a good coach somewhere. And I think this is, like, the quickest – nobody's ever fired a coach within 3 years of winning a Super Bowl since, like, 1960 or 70. Something crazy. I can't remember who it was or what team, but
only the Philadelphia Eagles.
It doesn't happen all. And the last three coaches that the Eagles have fired, Doug Peterson, Chip Kelly, Andy Reid, all had a winning record with the team.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's literally like that stuff only happens in Philadelphia.
So, and I said it earlier this year. I said we were going through the schedule and I was like, there's a possibility this team only wins four games in Philly. Winning four games means quarterback changes and head coaching changes, and this is what
might
happened.
Get both, yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of head coaches, I think this is a very, very interesting hire by the Jacksonville Jaguars, signing Urban Meyer to be their head coach. I didn't look at the contract details, so I'm not sure how many years or how much money, but very, very interesting. I'm always skeptical of college coaches making that jump to the NFL. I think it's a totally different world, and I'm curious to see how it goes.
So would you say the most successful one to do it's Pete Carroll?
I'd say you have Pete Carroll and you have Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about Harbaugh.
Harbaugh was dynamite. Like, people don't realize how awesome he was those three straight years in San Francisco, three or four. I think the fourth year was when he went 8-8 and left. But he was unbelievable those first 3 years. I know he didn't win a Super Bowl like Pete Carroll, but talk about just taking the league by storm. He was, I think he was, what, 13-3, 12-4, and 13-3.
And then he goes to Michigan and can't beat Ohio State, but gets an extension. So
hey, I think that was the right move by Michigan. I think that was the right move. I truly believe he can turn it around there.
The expectations are so high for these programs. Like, and we'll get to the game later, but if you're not Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State, like, you know, sorry. Like, the best you're going to do is get the fourth seed in the playoff, probably.
And lose by 100 to Alabama.
Yeah. I think this Urban Meyer thing's interesting, though, and the owner, Shad Khan, whether he wants to take the team to London or not, that's the big talk in Jacksonville, that ongoing joke. But I think this is big in terms of ticket sales. Obviously, they have the number one pick. Everyone thinks it's going to be Trevor Lawrence. But the amount of Florida Gators fans that there are in Jacksonville, in that area, and how close Gainesville is to Jacksonville, those Florida Gators fans are now automatically Jags fans. Like, those butts, that gets butts in the seats. And whether he's successful or not, we'll see. He'll probably have a 2-3 year window to, you know, win some games. But until he has a health concern and decides to leave. But, yeah, I think that's really interesting because all these Gators fans are now Jags fans.
Do you think Justin Fields could be the number one pick now?
I don't. I think it's just too many people. Did he coach? Was he at Ohio State when Fields was transferred? I don't think he was, right?
That's what I don't know off the top of my head. It was either the year directly after he left or his final – it was the year after he left, I believe. But I believe he influenced them in recruiting.
He probably was at Georgia his last year.
That's what I think was.
And then transferred to Ohio State the year Ryan Day came on board.
Because I believe Haskins was the quarterback for Urban Meyer in his final year, correct?
I think you're right.
When they won the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, you sound – 2018 season –
That was my fifth year at Pitt.
Yeah, in December 2018, Urban Meyer announced that he would retire from coaching following the Rose Bowl due to health reasons. And then he also came out and said that he's certain he'll never coach again.
Huh. Why does he say things like that?
You know, you knew, like, he was too young to be like, I'm never doing it again.
Yeah.
He was 53. He was 53 when he retired. Like, you've been coaching your whole life, and now you're gonna say I'm done, cold turkey.
I'll say this is very interesting, and I'm very curious to see if it works out. A lot of football people that I trust that I talk to think it's going to be a failed experiment, but
I'm curious to see how it goes, and I really want to see if Justin Fields goes number one. That's my hypothesis, is the Ohio State Buckeyes will stay united.
I would say two things. It's hard to come from college and go to the NFL. I feel like there's more failures than success stories. And two, you're going to a team that historically has not been very good, and you have to try and turn that around. So two things up against them there.
All right, let's move on to this joke of a national championship, and let's hit our ad break, and let's get rolling here for our big picks.
Yeah, so I don't know why I thought this would be a close game.
I picked Ohio State like a moron.
To win?
Yeah. I doubled down on it during the game, too. I lost money on that.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah, it felt like, so the Ohio State had a 3-and-out, I guess, first possession, if I remember correctly. And then it got to a point where it was 14-14. They were exchanging punches, and it got down to Ohio State had the ball. They were down 21-14, and they had to kick a field goal. And I just felt it. I was like, that's it. Like, they're not going to be able to stop Alabama. And if they're kicking field goals and not scoring touchdowns to match them every possession, they're not going to stand a chance.
It was so – like, I just can't get over in college football how the gap is so big. It's unbelievable to me. It is really unbelievable, and it's sad. And I hope coaches and programs can come in and fix it, because I'm honestly, as fun as it is to watch, like, Alabama's players be as good as they are, I want to see someone else get in there and do it. And not LSU. You know, I want to see – you know, a team like Cincinnati,
Coastal.
I want to see any other team, really, any other non-big, even like seeing a Georgia would be nice, or seeing, you know, an Oklahoma State, or a, you know, an Iowa, or an Iowa State, or Michigan back. Like, I want to see Texas. I want to see someone other than Alabama, Ohio State. I do really like Clemson because of Dabo. But, like, I want to see people or teams contest them. I'm sick of watching the same teams.
Well, Texas is back now. They got Sarkisian from
– Sarkisian. I think he brings them back. I think – my bold prediction, I think that's a fantastic hire. I think next year they beat Oklahoma for the first time in a long time. And I think the following year after that they'll win the Big 12.
Yeah, it was a tough game to watch. It was the lowest-rated – national championship game since they started, you know, these national broadcast games 23 years ago.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. 18.8 million viewers, and The Bachelor had 4.7 million viewers.
So, I hate The Bachelor.
I did not watch The Bachelor Monday. I watched the football game, but yeah. I mean, Sarkisian, the plays that they were drawing up or executing for Devonta Smith was, one, great play calls. Two, Ohio State, like, please cover this man. Like, you know, Devonta, he's going to get the ball.
Yeah, Devonta Smith is the best college receiver I've ever watched.
And it makes me sad because now, because he was so good, I don't even know if he's going to be there at six for the Eagles to take him.
It's rare you see receivers get taken so early, though.
But I could see Miami taking him at three.
No way. They'll go Penei Sewell. You can't, as good as Smith is, you can't pass up Penei Sewell. I would take Penei Sewell before Justin Fields in a heartbeat.
I could see them take, and then Atlanta's not going to take him at four because they have enough receivers.
Yeah.
Who's got the fifth pick? Why am I blanking?
I don't know.
Hold on. Cincy. Cincy could take him with Joe Burrow. You could make that.
They already have, what, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. Yeah, they have other things they need. They need to patch up that offensive line. They need to patch up their defense. I can't see them taking a receiver.
Well, he's a cheat code. If he falls to six and the Eagles probably won't draft him, that will be on brand.
Well, come April, we'll have a mock draft. So,
yeah. Let's see. What else do we have? Najee Harris. He's a beast.
Oh, he's unbelievable. He's probably my third or fourth favorite running back I've ever watched in college.
He should go in the first round. I know running backs don't often go in the first round, but
if I'm a team and I need a running back in the late first, I would take him.
Yeah. He's going to go to a team and be really good. I can see it. Some really good team is going to have a late pick and he's going to be really good with that really good team, and it's not going to be fair.
The Buffalo Bills after they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Bills will draft him at 32.
That'd be beautiful.
Yeah, the game was over at halftime. It sucked. I couldn't remember what the over-under was last week. I apologize.
They blew it.
But it was
way over. It was 75.
Yeah, 74.5 was the over, and that almost cashed in the first half. And there was a moment where I was like, Alabama might get the over by themselves.
Yeah, seriously. They're built different.
That's incredible. It's the – you look at – there was some – they had Mac Jones, Tua – Jalen Hurts, and then one year they got Jerry Jeudy, Waddle, Devontae Smith. Who's the other guy I'm missing? Ruggs.
Henry Ruggs.
Like, they just – there's no rebuild. It's reload every single year with them.
I know.
And Saban gets his seventh title at Bama. And he's going to –
just think, at one time on their roster, they had 4 first-round pick receivers – and they had 3 top 2-round pick quarterbacks.
It's not fair. It's
ridiculous.
Not
ridiculous.
And we talk like there was a point in the NBA world where it's like the Warriors are going to win every year, and
that's what Alabama feels like.
And it's Alabama. I think they've won 7 out of the last 14 years or something like that.
Something crazy. It's stupid. And I'm actually kind of done. I don't want to talk about it anymore because it's upsetting me. So
yeah, we've been going for a while. So now we're gonna take a break. Since I forgot about the Eagles and Doug Peterson, but now we're going to take a break. On the other side, we still got more, so stick with us.
It's juicy. It's always juicy after the break. We put our money where our mouths are.
We've got the Jeopardy. Someone named James Harden got traded. I'd never heard of him. $100 bets for the divisional round games. See you guys on the other side.
Hey guys, this is Kojo from the Kojo and JMO show. I wanted to take a quick little break to talk about Anchor. Anchor has done an incredible job making it extremely easy to upload podcasts online. One of the best parts about it, it's free. Free 99, as JMO likes to say, it is free 99. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. They have made it incredibly easy for us. I know nothing about technology. I'm technologically inept, and they've made it incredibly easy for us to do this. So please go check them out. Again, as my co-host JMO likes to say, it is free 99.
All right, we're back. Going to do our Sports Jeopardy. Should I continue to call it Sports Jeopardy, even though it's technically not branded Jeopardy?
Yeah, I think you should, because we're a sports podcast, baby.
Okay. I was going to say either Sports Trivia or Sports Jeopardy. I don't know what's better.
We'll treat it as Jeopardy.
Okay. So this one's going to be a little different. This one's a little weird. And again, we're on the same team here. I haven't looked at the answer. I accidentally looked at last week, so that's why I couldn't participate. But this one is a GOAT quote trivia. So this Let's is, I'm going to read you a quote, and you have to tell me who said this.
Oh, this is difficult. It better be.
Like, and there's no dollar worth, right?
Well, we'll do this one $1,200. Last week was $400, so this will be $1,200.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. Here's the quote. It was a big deal. I was the MVP of the Super Bowl and had more people ask me about the Disney commercial than how I played the game. When the commercial came out the next day, everybody just wanted to know all about it. So that's all we get. So Super Bowl MVPs, can we name some?
Is this like recent?
It doesn't give. That's all we get.
That's all we get.
It was a big deal. I was the MVP of the Super Bowl, and everybody wanted to talk to me about the Disney commercial. Whew, I can't even name like 5 MVPs off the top of my head.
So Tom Brady is
Nick Foles, Eli Manning, Mahomes. I feel like this was like earlier because like the Disney. I feel like nowadays Disney. I'm going to Disney World isn't a huge deal anymore.
No, they always say it's. I feel like it had to have been early, right?
Yeah. I really don't have any guesses.
So let's see. I'm trying to think. So I remember Malcolm Smith was one.
Yeah.
Tom Brady.
Is it cheating if I look up the last Super Bowl winners?
Yeah, I can't do that. Von Miller. Von Miller got one.
It's going to be someone from like the 70s that we don't. Is it George Blanda?
I'm going to guess either someone who you wouldn't expect. I'm going to guess either Von Miller or Malcolm Smith. So you pick one of those two.
I'll go Malcolm Smith, but I feel like it's going to be older.
Yeah, I feel like you're right. But I don't know anyone who won it in the old days. Maybe like a John Elway or a Steve Young.
Ooh, we know this guy. Final answer is Phil Simms. Super Bowl 21.
I wouldn't have guessed that.
I would have never known that Phil Simms was a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, me neither.
Whew. These are tough. That's why I wanted.
Yeah, they're ridiculously tough.
That's why I wanted to like be on the same team with you, because I think we needed two brains for these ones. So, -1200, -400, -1600 for us.
Goodness,
that was tough.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a brutal one.
All right, so the biggest news of the week probably is this blockbuster deal in the NBA. The NBA season is going on, by the way, for those of you who didn't know, because of football. But James Harden, he's going to the Nets. Here's the trade. It was a four-team trade, so there's a lot of tentacles here. Rockets, they get Victor Oladipo, Dante Exum, some guy named Radonius Quirokes.
Yeah, he's like a big white stretch four guy.
Four first-round picks, four Brooklyn pick swaps. The Nets, they get James Harden. The Pacers, they get Caris LeVert and a second-round pick. And the Cavs get Jared Allen and Taurean Prince. I'm butchering his first name.
Taurean Prince?
Taurean Prince, yeah. All right, initial reaction, go.
The Nets just made the worst trade ever, other than when they traded for Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce and all of them and gave up everything. I think this is an awful, awful, awful trade. I think James Harden is a cancer wherever he goes. He can't win. He won't win. He never will win.
It's incredible that this is happening. Like this, I think it's a bad trade. I think the Nets gave up too much depth. I thought having Caris LeVert coming off the bench was one of their biggest advantages.
I love Caris LeVert. There's so many things I actually really want to say about this trade, but I won't be for the sake of time. But like, it's just everything that it's making me hate basketball, because you can act like a total baby whiny douchebag and get your way. Like the way James Harden ran his way out of Houston drives me absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Like, and he just complained about they couldn't win. You're supposed to be good enough. Go out there and win. Look at old teams LeBron had to take to the finals when Eric Snow was his second best player. Like, it drives me. It makes me mad. I just can't stand the babiness aspect
and
of it.
He complained and complained and complained, and he got the pieces put around him that he wanted, and he still couldn't win. He shrinks in the playoffs.
Couldn't even come close. The only time he was ever close was when he had Chris Paul, because Chris Paul was a real leader and told him to shove it.
Yeah, he got rid of Chris Paul to get Russell Westbrook, and
they were worse significantly. Yeah.
And it's a problem when Boogie Cousins and John Wall are the two voices of reason in your locker room, and they were as over as James Harden as everybody else was.
I will say I do love the maturity of Boogie and John Wall and how far they've come. And it's like James Harden has gone on the opposite trajectory. He's gone down when the others have gone up in terms of maturity.
It's incredible that this trade, and I texted you about this earlier today, it's like less than 24 hours ago, I guess we're recording this on Thursday night, but whatever. He got the trade. He complained at that press conference and said, I've done everything I can. This cannot be fixed. And within 24 hours, he was gone.
I know.
Like, how does that happen? And we see these players do it. James Harden did it, you know, this week. Anthony Davis did it to an extent in New Orleans. Like, Kawhi even did it to an extent in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And it's these guys, they have too much power, and they just force their way out.
What's the point of coaches and GMs anymore? There's no point, because players dictate whatever they want. They really do. Kyrie Irving might never play basketball again. He just comes and goes as he pleases. Like, there's, you know, insiders in the Brooklyn Nets organization that think he's never going to play basketball again.
Yeah, and this, we could spend 30 minutes on this, obviously. But, yeah, we haven't even touched on the Kyrie factor of Kyrie hasn't been there, and they don't know what he's doing, and they don't know when he's coming back, and they're saying, you know, when he comes back, you know, we hope he comes back soon, and we're ready for that kind of. But it's like nobody knows what's going on with him. And yes, on paper you've got your big three of Harden, KD, and Kyrie, but it's when's Kyrie coming back? How is James Harden going to mesh with these guys? KD is now like the most mature one there, and their usage, not even to mention their usage rates that they have. I don't. It's a total disaster. And here's Steve Nash. Hey, I'm a new first year head coach, Steve Nash. What do you guys got for me? Oh, here's Kyrie, KD. Okay, like I can work with Kyrie. We can get through it. Oh, here you go. Let's get rid of all your depth and add in James Harden. Figure it out, Steve Nash.
Not to mention their only big man is DeAndre Jordan.
And Jared Allen is a good player. I liked him.
I know he was. They traded so much.
LeVert, like,
and they have 1,000 guards on that roster. Like I can't even begin. I hope I'm actively rooting against him. I hope it's an awful experiment. I hope they're the worst organization ever because that's how much I dislike James Harden.
They're now the favorite to win the East.
I think it's going to be hilarious when they suck. It's literally going to have to be James Harden's going to have to just defer to Durant. Durant is their only hope.
Who takes the last shot?
It's got to be Durant. James Harden, if I have to sit there and watch James Harden dribble 1,000 times and do a travel step back that is now legal in the NBA, I can't do it. I hate watching him play basketball. They're going to be bad. I'm telling you, you can't win with James Harden. It's not possible.
And Oladipo.
I love Oladipo.
He's on the end of this where he gets sent to Houston. And there's, yes, Houston gets 4 first-round picks, but first-round picks in the NBA are not what they are in the NFL.
I am going to say, though, so Houston could be the big winners in this if they all could just stay healthy. Now their entire roster is full of just guys who get hurt a lot. But yeah, when they're healthy, Oladipo and John Wall are two of the most athletic guards in the NBA. Like, period. That's going to be tough to defend if they can play healthy. And then Boogie, if he can get into shape and stay healthy too, paired with Christian Wood, they could actually be really good now. I think they're the big winners in all this. And they got rid of that douchebag.
I think the Cavs are trying to stock up on all the centers in the league so nobody else can have them.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though. They got 2 guards that are pretty solid, too. So I think the Cavs did well in this trade, too.
They still have Tristan Thompson, right?
Tristan Thompson's on the Boston Celtics.
Oh, you're right. They've got Andre Drummond. Now they've got Jared Allen. Not to mention Larry Nance.
But I'll tell you what, though.
Stocking up on the big guys.
Screw the NBA. They're a bunch of turds. Let's move on.
We're already like 20% done with the NBA season. Just a heads up.
I know. My fantasy team's hurt. I have Jason Tatum and John Morant both injured.
Do you have James Harden?
Heck no. I would refuse to take him.
That's good. All right. Yeah, we'll go to the divisional round games. Do you want to talk about the games first and then do $100 bets or combine the two into one?
Let's just combine the two into one because, spoiler alert, my bets consist of every single game.
Okay, so
I lost.
All right, yeah, so we'll jump to $100 bets.
A kid mailed the $100 bill back to them.
Right here, I'm going to put a crisp $100 bill.
You lost last week. You went 0-4. I had a very impressive 1-3, so that means I won. So I'm 1-0 in the playoffs.
I'm proud of you to beat my 0-4.
It took a lot. It took every ounce, every game.
All right. So to start off, let's look at my favorite team, the Saturday night NBC game. We got the Buffalo Bills and Baltimore Ravens. I think this game is going to live up to it and be the best game of the weekend. I'm very, very, very nervous about this game for the Buffalo Bills because of their, you know, struggle stopping the run. However, I think Leslie Frazier is an awesome defensive coordinator. I think teams are crazy for not giving him more head coaching interviews. I think he's going to have a really, really good game plan. I think he's actually going to hold Lamar Jackson and that run game down. Where I'm actually more concerned is on the other side of the ball because the Buffalo Bills don't run the ball well. It's supposed to be a snowy game, which technically shouldn't really affect passing, but the wind factor could. But
the Baltimore Ravens are likely going to be able to go man across the board and bring a lot of pressure. And if they have the guys on the outside that can contain Diggs, you know, can contain Gabriel Davis, John Brown, Cole Beasley's banged up, you know, and I don't think I don't trust Dawson Knox, the tight end in the passing game, where I think that that's the side of the ball that scares me. Nonetheless, I am going to pick the Bills to win the game, and my bet, $10, is going to be on the under. I think it's actually going to be a defensive game. I'm going to go $10 on the under.
What is the over-under?
49.5. Okay, that's fine. Minus 110 odds, but I'm taking the under. So that's my, you know, take on that game. I go to the Rams-Packers game Saturday beforehand. I got the Rams, and I twisted the line. I have a little bit worse odds, but I got the Rams +7. I love them +7, $25, minus 118. That defense is elite. It's phenomenal. It's one of the best I've watched. But Aaron Rodgers is just going to be a little bit too much for that defense, and Jared Goff can't throw. So I got the Packers winning by 6. I think they score like a late touchdown or a couple field goals late in the game to win. I like Green Bay to win a close one. $25, Rams +7, though. Just want to emphasize the bet.
Mm-hmm.
Next, I have Tampa Bay. I like them +3 against the Saints. I'm going to take Tampa Bay. I think the Saints match up incredibly well with Tampa Bay, but I can't see anyone beating a Tom Brady team 3 times in 1 year. It all comes down to Tom Brady for me. I think they find a way. Drew Brees still can't throw the ball vertically downfield. I like Tampa Bay to win this game. I think they do. I think it's a close one, but I got Tampa Bay winning. What I put on that? $25, Tampa Bay +3.
So you got $40 left.
$40 on my parlay. I got Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Buffalo, Kansas City. Kansas City, I was dangerously close to rolling with the Browns. Teams that have rested back-to-back weeks. So the Chiefs did not start their starters in week 18 or week 17, whatever it was. And then they had the off week, the wild card round. Those teams, I read an article today, really, really struggle in the postseason. And I think they're like 3-14 or something crazy like that. So I was very close to rolling with the Browns. I think that's going to be a close game. I just don't know how much I can trust that Browns defense against Mahomes. But I'm rolling with Kansas City to win that game. But that's not an individual game I'm betting on. They're just part of my parlay.
What are those
parlay
odds?
Is $40. Again, Tampa Bay, Green Bay, Buffalo, Kansas City, +600 odds.
It's not horrible. That bucks is where you get the value. Now that you said that stat, I'm thinking the last I can think of was the Eagles did that in their Super Bowl run in 17. They rested in week 17 and then they had the bye. They played Atlanta in the divisional round and it was a 15-10 game, close game.
That maybe was one of the wins, believe it or not. They highlighted that in the article.
Maybe that 10-point line, maybe you want to sneak on that Browns +10. Maybe it's closer than people think. The Chiefs might be a little rusty. But yeah, I like your picks. They all seem logical.
Hold on real quick. Sorry.
Yeah, you're good.
So I found the stat. Straight up, teams that rest 2 straight weeks, they're 2-4. Against the spread, they're 4-13.
Mm.
Since 2011, they're 0-6 against the spread.
Mm. Browns +10 for those listening.
I was very, very close to throwing it in there.
10 points is a lot. Maybe not to the Chiefs, but it is a lot in a playoff game. All right. Well, I will do mine. So I'll go with your Buffalo. I'll start with Buffalo, your Saturday night game. I like Buffalo -2.5.
I
think I'm putting, what did I say? $30. $30 on this one. Because it's supposed to snow, like you said. Lamar Jackson's never played in the snow. That's all I needed to hear.
He's never played in the snow.
We talked about Tua and him coming to Buffalo and how that was going to affect him. And we were like, has he ever played in a game below 32 degrees? I don't know. But now I know Lamar Jackson has never played in the snow, and it's supposed to snow. That's all I needed to know. Bills minus 2.5.
I love it, Jared.
Next, we've got the Rams. And I'm being a little sneaky here. I'm just doing the Rams money line, which is plus 270. I like the defense. I think it's going to be cold and potentially snowy in Green Bay, which you would think would favor Aaron Rodgers, but that makes me think it's going to be a defensive game. I think the Rams have a better defense. Jared Goff is going to win the game with four fingers and no thumbs, and it's going to be an electric atmosphere in Green Bay with no fans.
I will say I will not be surprised if the Rams win. I won't be.
I'm interested to see the matchup between Jalen Ramsey and Devontae Adams. That'll be exciting. And I think it's a long shot, but I'm rolling with it. Plus 270 Rams money line. Next, I'm going to Tampa Bay. You and I are like-minded here. Tampa Bay plus 3. Again, we've been saying it for weeks. I'm still not impressed with the Saints. Like, I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe if they have to beat the Bucs. If they beat the Bucs for the third time, then I will be impressed. But I'm not sold on them yet. And I think of Brady as an underdog, I'm taking the points. Taking Brady in the points, plus 3. My parlay is a little bit of a long shot. It is the Cleveland Browns and the Tampa Bay Bucks. Those odds are plus 1,100. So $10 on that. So 30, 30, 30, 10. So Browns, Bucks, plus 1,100. This Browns team, man, they've got a destiny, nobody believes in us vibe.
They give me the Tennessee Titans vibe of last year to get a couple upsets there in the first two games. You know, last year they beat the Patriots, nobody thought they would. Then they go into Baltimore and beat Baltimore up like nobody thought they would. I really think, like you said, they got a little bit of a destiny feel to them, this Cleveland team. And I'm thinking about, on my own, placing a side little parlay of Browns-Rams.
That would be fun. What would those odds be?
Probably pretty high. And while you finish what you were saying, because I'm sorry for cutting you off, I'm going to look at it.
Those would probably be 20-1, probably. But yeah, I think the Bills-Ravens game is going to be exciting. The Bucks-Saints, another divisional game in the divisional round, divisional squared. That'll be fun. I mean, all these teams are supposed to be the best 8 teams in football, so every game should be fun to watch. I'm really looking forward to the Ravens-Bills game, though.
Okay, so let's see. I'm actually going to add the Bucks to this. So if you have Rams, Browns, Bucks, 3 teams, plus 4,433 odds. So if I bet $10, that's $453.
And it's not impossible. It's not likely. It's not impossible.
I might just place it.
Do it. You won't.
I will. I already have another one placed, and that was the one I just said, plus 600. And I also have a parlay boost on that. I don't know, though. Jared, do I place it?
We need to get DraftKings to be an ad. We give them enough plug.
I know.
Oh, well. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
I do have a small gym corner story if we're done with $100 bets.
I'm done with them, yep.
So, nothing crazy. I've been saying that a lot the past couple weeks because nothing crazy has happened. I'm in Virginia now. I got the AirPods Pro for Christmas. You know the new AirPods?
I don't. I've never actually looked into AirPods ever.
Are you familiar with what AirPods are?
Yes, of course.
Okay, so there is a version that they first came out with, and then there's a second version, which is the Pro, AirPods Pro. So I got those for Christmas, and they have this noise-canceling feature, which is pretty sweet. You've got the AirPods in, and I can't hear anything. So now I'm at the gym, and when I used to hear all these people grunting and making weird noises and doing weird things, now I can't hear them because I got this noise-canceling aspect, and I'm in my own world. So it's actually kind of neat. But the AirPods, they don't come with a charging block. It's the most idiotic thing in the world. You get the AirPods, you open it up, it has a charger, like a cord, but there's no block to plug it in. And it's not like your standard iPhone charger where it's a USB. It's some different cord at the bottom, and I don't have a block to charge my AirPods. And I'm like, how can Apple get away with selling a product that's $250 and doesn't even give you a charger?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. How do you get the block thing or whatever it actually is?
You have to like buy it separately.
They're taking over the world, man.
I know.
They're part of the new world order.
They're not giving away charging blocks so you can buy their charging blocks. And the sad thing is everybody's going to do it.
Yeah, it's genius.
Everybody wants to have an Apple phone or product, and it's just the new norm, and I hate it.
I'm going to create my own monopoly.
And there was this old couple at the gym, and this guy was doing incline bench press with the dumbbells, and she was wiping his face with a towel as he was sweating, which was strange. it's like get me someone who, when I'm 50 years old and I'm doing dumbbell incline bench press with, you know, 70-pound dumbbells and sweat dripping down my face, that my wife will be there with a towel to wipe it off my brow.
That's off my brow.
That's goals right there.
That is goals. That's amazing.
Wow. That's all I got. That's what I want to end on.
Let's end it on the old couple wiping sweat off each other at the gym. I hope you guys have a wonderful weekend. Hope you guys watch football, watch all kinds of sports, watch soccer, watch hockey, watch basketball, whatever you want to watch, make sure you watch. But make sure you guys take our bets to heart, because we're going to win you millions of dollars. Make sure you follow us on social media at Kojo and JMO Show on Twitter and Instagram. Email us kojoandjmoshow@gmail.com if you have any questions, or DM us, or you can text us, because I'm sure if you're listening to our podcast, you probably have our numbers. If you want a question answered, reach out to us. And of course, we're on all your podcast listening devices. So like, rate, subscribe. 5 stars only.
5 stars only. You guys know the rules. Phil Sims, Super Bowl 21 MVP, Disney.
Phil friggin' Sims.
See you guys.